Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsack.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and I am thrilled to be here for some news and some Qs. The news stands for news, and the Q stands for questions, for now, until we just go wild and make it stand for something different.
Maybe just, again, is a Q from Star Trek. I may have said that before in my life, but maybe we can analyze Q. Just do it here in Four Center.
What if it was news in Quaitol sight? Every episode we talked about the freshest Star Wars news and then just revisited the character Quaitol sight.
You know, that'd be one of those quirky little podcasts that would suddenly have a million viewers and listeners and everything. Do you listen to the Quaitol sight podcast? It's just Quaitol sight.
They just review his few minutes of screen time again and again.
I prefer going deep into the themes of Star Wars. But you know what? I also just appreciate Quaitol sight. So there you go. We got a big show coming up here today. Before we really get into that and our business that we love to handle up top, I want to say this episode is dedicated to the memory of a friend of our show and a man who became a friend of myself too, Zach Basinger, who was previous guest actually on Star Wars Spotlight Star Wars here. I'm going to talk at the end of the show, like we always do, about charities and places to maybe focus your heart this week. There's a GoFundMe set up for Zach's family because Zach, unfortunately, passed away December 27th. And I got the word from his brother. And Zach and I had formed a little friendship after he'd reached out. Actually, not even reached out, just tweeted something very kind and supportive for us here at Force Center, and struck up a friendship with him. And he had been battling cancer with all of his life and all of his heart and all of his soul, and passed away. And I want to dedicate this episode to him at the end of the episode. If y'all don't mind sticking around, talk a little bit about him and some of his thoughts on Star Wars, and let y'all know where you can maybe help his wife and mother and surviving family members who gave their all to support him in the last couple of years, but also a battle that's been going on for over 10 years. So always hate to start with somber stuff, but also I think in it being sad and somber, there's also great hope. There's light and dark in all of us. And this is definitely a story that pushes towards the light. So stay tuned for that. As always, we're going to get to the news and all those wonderful questions. But we do like to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, as always, whoever Force Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. And Joseph, that's not all. We have another offer and I think a perfect choice for the start of the new year.
Oh, absolutely. That other offer is from Inside Editions. They publish a ton of great Star Wars books and other pop culture books, too. And Inside Editions is offering 35% off across their entire website with this special link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. And as Ken said, we have a special one for the beginning of the new year. It is coming out very soon. It is the Inside Editions book, Inner Jedi Journal. Ken and I both have advanced copies, and this is a journal that can help you be like a Jedi. That does not mean cutting off limbs at the bar like Kenobi, but rather focusing on being your best self. There are a bunch of great little examples of different ways that Jedi have overcome challenges or practices that they have worked to walk with the light, and then have little room for, like, can you be like Yoda? That is a question I ask myself every new year. Can I be more like a Jedi? So if you want to join us on that Inner Jedi Journal journey, you can use the link insideeditions.com/discount/FC35.
It's a great little book, and I've been thumbing through it. And if you think you're like, it's a cute little Star Wars book, no, this will challenge you. This makes you think about how can I be like a Jedi and be just a better version of myself. So, hey, that's great. That's what Star Wars should be about. Fun, yeah. Silly, and can you grow?
Can you grow? Absolutely. I have the book out in my living room, and I've walked past it a couple of times, and it's like it's looking at me. And I'm like, I'm trying, book.
Giant book. Yeah, there's also got like the book, The Jedi Artifacts, coming out, which is like a little, not sellier, but just like, oh, there's like cute little items and tchotchkes from Jedi archives. And yeah, that's great. You open up this book, and you're like, how can you serve others better? Like, oh no.
Yeah, it's really getting to the heart of things. I look forward to spending even more time with it.
Absolutely. All right. We like to catch up, and we're coming out of a busy holiday season, but when is life not busy? Joseph, did you have any life for Star Wars adventures?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the life adventure is just, you know, the new year, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, just that whole idea of the passage of time, but taking a beat to acknowledge it is something that's really powerful to me. I often joke that I like New Year's because it's a holiday where we can wear silly hats and yell at time. but I think it's a fascinating holiday to me because it is festive. That's the way it's celebrated. For many years I've done a live show, and I love that because it's this, it's a very cathartic time, right? Cause you can kind of celebrate what's gone well in the year, and you can have the real cathartic. And you know what? The stuff that sucked, goodbye. Don't let the door hit your ass on the way out vibe, you know? And it's, there's something very cathartic about it, very healing, that you kind of process. You celebrate the good things, you process the bad things, and then you turn toward the light.
Yes.
You turn toward a time where you can kind of culturally say, let's try to put our best foot forward. Let's try to have hope, even though we know everything's not going to be perfect. So I love the holiday for lots of reasons. And because of some of those ideas that I was talking about, I feel like it's a very Star Wars holiday, that it is about acknowledging that, you know, everything isn't going to be perfect, but I have some amount of power and what can I do? So a ritual that my wife and I have that makes it kind of a Star Wars adventure is every year on New Year's Day, we put stickers on our calendars. It's often Star Wars stickers. This year on my little physical day planner, I have a sticker that Sarah, my wife, got somewhere. I don't know where from. It is the outline of Yoda with the cane and with the hand raised like Yoda's using the Force. But inside of Yoda is just this swirling green luminous energy.
Oh, yeah.
And it looks like that. Yeah. Hey, remember, you have power inside us all. There's swirling luminous energy. So I put that on the front of my calendar, a Boba Fett sticker on the back. And for several years, I've been writing down my New Year's resolutions in a little book that I got in like a kid's activity pack for Rise of Skywalker. But it says True Jedi. It's got the Skywalker saber. It's got the Vexus that that Rey healed. So I really just kind of like that image because it's about, you know, not just using your power to cut the Vexus apart, but to heal it. So I made some resolutions, and I really wanted to use the influence of Star Wars on the resolutions. And for this year, I really made resolutions that are only things that I can control, like finish this, do this one activity. By the end of the year, it will be a yes or no that I did it, and it is under my power, you know, because there's so many things in life that you can do your best, but the rest of the world has to play along. And then there are other things that only you control. And I think that came from a Star Wars perspective.
I think you should put all this down in your inner Jedi journal. I think this is great. Page one. Great start to the year.
I know. I got a lot of work to do on that Star Wars book.
Yeah. And I'm with you. It's easy to get cynical on the arbitrary flipping of a calendar to a new year. I get that too. You know, it's kind of silly on the surface, but I have always been one that kind of says, no, this is a good time to take a moment. We all need to take more moments to really concentrate on where we are, what we're doing, and where we're going. So if it's January 1st or December 31st and there's champagne or a hand while you do it, that's a good start. So I'm with you on all this stuff. I love that.
Do you make resolutions?
Yeah, whatever you want to call them, right? Like resolutions, goals, intentions. I don't care what you call them. I do them sometimes smaller scale like you. What kind of control? Sometimes like I don't want to get, you know, we're going to go to the gym 9 hours a day. You know, that's not realistic. And I do like looking at the best ways to turn those dreams into goals and into action items. But that sounds like I'm talking in some business meeting and about best practices and all this. So no, I'm with you too on that. This year I didn't specifically write a bunch down, but I've done that before and it works, checking it off and choosing things that you really want to do, but you really want to be, and you really want to just get done, whether or not what happens after that. That's a great approach. Yes or no. Either you do it or you don't. I think Yoda would be.
Yeah, well, I hope so, because he's on my calendar and he's going to be looking at me with his luminous green swirling energy every day. So what were your other Star Wars or life adventures?
You know, a quiet New Year's, which was wonderful, outside of just wanting to maybe hunker down and be a little safe during this past week after being out and around and traveling to D.C. and whatnot. That was part of our quiet New Year's, but also it was just good for Grace and I to relax. We watched a great show on HBO, The Landscapers, just kind of took everything in and did some work. And that was the thing too. You sometimes relaxing clears your mind and you find a, you know, new drive for work or the energy or creativity that you might have previously been clogged because you were trying to work. Mm-hmm. So I actually on New Year's Day recorded for like 6 hours, just wrote and recorded and had fun doing that. So it was good. That was a good start. It was a good start to the year.
Did you feel like everything flowed more because you weren't worried about time and you were really, you weren't getting this done because it was due tomorrow? It was just, you feel like doing it and you were flowing from one idea to the next kind of thing.
Yeah. And releasing yourself of the burden of I've got to do it, or I'm doing it for clicks and listens and, you know, for me and you and kind of our creative pursuits, including whether it's writing and you're going to sell a show or win an Oscar. Yeah, like, just like I'm blessed to be in the position I am to be able to create. And so I think my mind is a little clear of just like, oh, tomorrow for New Year's, I have nothing to do but create, which is why I moved here, why I'm here, and why I feel I'm on this planet. So might as well do it. That was good. And the other thing, I want to do a follow-up, Joseph, to I think the it wasn't even the news and cues last week. It might have been the deep dive we talked about it. I did a closet cleaning, right? And I said, I was like, look, I'm going to get rid of Star Wars shirts, almost all of them. I'm going to not wear as many Star Wars things. I'm not going to proclaim it. And I still got a little bit of a spirit of that as well. You're not going to see me maybe in as much stuff. But I got to tell you, Joseph, I got to the closet. I started pulling out shirts. And I had the keep pile and the donate pile, to be clear, not tossing them out. And that donate pile with the Star Wars shirts got pretty small, where the keep got pretty big. I realized that was folly. That was folly for me to say that. And it started with the great Brian Ward, our wonderful friend, Brian Ward, who did the Force and logo. He actually just tweeted out the, I think, 3 or 4 year anniversary of the animated databank brawl clip he did with you, me, and Black. So talented. And he also has a Tee Public shop, and he'll put Star Wars themed shirts on, and you have to grab them fast because Disney comes through and just does a sweeping copyright claim on everything and take it down. So I got to some of his shirts, his Roll It Again shirt, his pod racing shirt is kind of the NASCAR logo. And I was like, there's no way in hell Han Solo will be waiting for me in hell before I get rid of these shirts. So I even texted Brian. I said, I couldn't do it. And you're the reason. So I got rid of about 4 or 5 shirts, Joseph. I own no more Funko Pop related shirts, no more weird crossover shirts like Tauntaun O's or, you know, Khaleesi cereal or anything like that. That's gone, but, inventive, subtle, fun Star Wars shirts. I'm going to publicly apologize to the shirts. I'm never going to leave you. I'm never going to leave you.
I love this. You're a little bit like Luke going, I'm going to burn this tree down. Like, but I don't, that's so great though. It sounds like you looked at him for like Brian's, right? You looked at the creativity of him, the memory, your friendship with Brian. But I would imagine for others, it was just a connection of like, but I really like what this shirt represents. I remember the day I bought it, the day I wore it, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. There's one shirt I've had since 2014. And some, even before that, to be clear, but it's, I wear it a lot. You see a lot of promotional photos I have where it's like, it's an all black t-shirt with the wispy kind of pre-viz look of an X-Wing, right? Mm. Looks like a broad paint stroke, just an X-Wing. And that was a gift from my Jedi Alliance cohort, Maude Garrett, back in the day, Christmas 2014. And I miss Maude. I don't get to see or work with Maude much anymore, but it was just one of those, it's one of my favorite shirts. And I'm like, it's not, and it's in good condition. It's not frayed. The heart is strong like the Kyber. It's ready to go. Shirt is good. So we're going to keep it.
The strongest shirts are made of Kyber. That's great.
Mm-hmm. So just wanted to update everyone. I apologize for trying to burn down the tree. Not going to do that again. All right, we got to look at some Star Wars news here. And hey, it's a holiday weekend and week, so not going to be as much news. So I want to shout out our friends over at Star Wars News Net who do a great job of finding some of the news that's a little less rumor filled. And even if it is, they'll let you know. And we always kind of go to them, and we want to shout Star Wars News Net and John, Lacey, James, the whole team over there, and all their wonderful writers, especially Grant Davis, who had a lot of stories we were looking at today. So the question is, where do you get your Star Wars news, Joseph, in this first story? Because Lucasfilm holiday gift leak confirms new animated show? ? This has been going around for a bit. We're playing catch up on some of it. This was a follow-up to the original story that kind of confirmed it. So this is a photo leak to Reddit, which is sometimes suspicious, and sometimes I'm convinced it's like Bob Iger himself going, let me just have some fun today, even though Iger's right. He's done, right? He's out. He waved.
Well, maybe he did this. That is the last thing he did is he took a photo of a company gift at a holiday party. And he's like, I'm going to throw a little chaos bomb over my shoulders. I walk out the door.
As Uncle Bob would do. This is, an alleged Lucasfilm holiday employee gift. I mean, this is a lot. And a photo that has gone around shows a logo for a couple animated programs, Star Wars Visions, The Bad Batch, got the logo. And then in between them, looking pretty official, not that you can't make those on your own, but looks pretty official, Star Wars Tales of the Jedi. Now that got a lot of people buzzing. What is this? Is this a show coming? What's going on? We heard some rumors. What's going on? And then there was a job listed on LinkedIn. Oh, LinkedIn. For the CGI animation group Icon Creative Studio. And it shows them needing help on an unannounced Lucasfilm series. So, Joseph, I ask you, does all of this add up to us getting Tales of the Jedi?
Oh, well, man, this is a real from a certain point of view, right? Maybe there is some evidence that we can't see, but I totally understand from the evidence that we can see why people would get excited and think that this is a possibility. So, yeah, there's a lot of good evidence. Maybe not. The fact that the Star Wars holiday gifts have traditionally been like here, are, you can pick out some, you know, clothing from the upcoming shows or the shows that you've been working on. We see those, you know, after the fact all the time. And, you know, people who've worked on shows go, hey, here's my great, you know, jacket. So that all makes sense. It is not at all wild to think that, yeah, of course they're working on more animated shows, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So all that evidence seems solid. There could be something that we don't see or we don't know that changes everything.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry to even jokingly put you on the spot of tell me if true. Yes, no.
No.
Yeah, but it is kind of fun to think. And I think, you know, we always say speculation and getting excited and even taking a swing through the rumor mill is not in and of itself bad. I think what you do with that information or do with that wonder and want is a choice that much like Star Wars, you know, it's a choice to you got a choice in front of you. So we're having fun with this one. And I do like this idea. And I do wonder if, you know, hey, someone accidentally took a picture on their Instagram page of look what I got at work today. And this could lead to it. But also just this idea. I definitely want to kick this back to you here. Tales of the Jedi, some kind of animated show. Just the world of possibilities, even in this I was going to say post, but we're in the middle of the beginning, actually, of the High Republic era. It's just that it's something about that that works for me. Like, if you're going to do that kind of the next big animated project, that sounds like an arena to play in, you know?
Oh, my. Yes. I mean, I think it, for me, with news like this, you know, or I guess investigative journalism on Reddit, I think the thing for me is always, It's fun and fine to speculate. And the problem is when it just starts to get passed around as though true, right? And that's not at all what Star Wars News Net is doing. Star Wars News Net is you know, laying out the evidence. And it is really fun to speculate. So from that mindset, if this is actually coming, I'm thrilled just by the title.
Yeah.
By everything that it could be, to answer your actual question. I think it is really we have to acknowledge that there's a comic book series of the same name.
Right.
And I did a little bit of a Wikipedia review on that. The Tales of the Jedi comic book ran from 1993 to 1998, originally intended to be a real anthology of, you know, like 4,000 to 5,000 years before the Skywalker saga. Mm. But it's extra fascinating because the stories that ended up being in that relatively short comic book run are a lot of the core characters and ideas of the Old Republic era. Things from that are referenced in the Knights of the Old Republic video game. So a lot of what has kind of grown up to be what people mean when they say Old Republic are the seeds of it or some of the details are in this comic run, which I really want to find time to review. So that's really intriguing to me that they would use that title. I think for my own hope, not even speculation, from my own hope, if Tales of the Jedi is a real animated series, I kind of hope that it's not Old Republic.
Yeah.
Because I would want Old Republic. Old Republic is such a good match for the films, I think, because it's just so big and so explosive. And if you were going to do a Tales of the Jedi series, you could go during the High Republic era. You could go maybe during the Old Republic era, but it's just adventures that Jedi are having, not like here's the heart of the war, you know, all that kind of thing. So yeah, those are my initial thoughts. And then my big thing that I've been thinking about, Ken, is anthology series or following a few specific characters. Which would you be more excited about?
It's funny. I would lean towards the anthology series, and great research on that title and the comic series, which I think I've passed on the shelf of my comic shop a few times, you know, the probably a trade paperback of those.
many trade paperbacks and remixed with different titles. And like, it's that kind of comic book. Like you got to research to make sure you know what you're buying.
Yeah. So I would lean towards anthology. Yeah, you're right. Not necessarily High Republic. I would, but like almost like leading up to Phantom Menace, but I don't need it to be connected. Just like, hey, there's a dispute here. They went and settled, or a conversation they had here. I really love that short series of Mace Windu, which I think is pretty poignant and worth a read if you guys haven't gone through it. But it has that kind of vibe of he and his master went over here to deal with X, you know, and the galaxy didn't change, but he changed. I would love that. But in terms of an animated show, I think just at a personal want, Rebels worked for me very well because it was this focused story on a small group. If you were to focus on a couple Jedi, you know, Master Padawan, I don't know the relationship. Not a, you know, younglings learning from Yoda type situation. But if it was real kind of narrow focused on just a couple characters I could get behind, a few, five, six, whatever, I think that might work for me more now than an anthology series.
Yeah, I think that would be really intriguing to me to have just a core group of like, are these, you know, all people who kind of grew up together and they're all knights now? And is it even a little bit of the Clone Wars model where like the Clone Wars animated series has a handful of main characters, but it still has this anthology vibe of like, yeah, and you're not going to see Ahsoka, Obi-Wan, or Anakin, and we're going to spend four episodes with droids. Or you know what? That villain became really interesting, so here's three episodes about the villain. I'd be interested in that sort of pseudo anthology Clone Wars animated series structure as well.
Yeah. Pseudo anthology is a great way to look at it. Cause I've had, you know, the reward of the Clone Wars report we're doing here in Force Center going through has I just love the experience I'm having of reconnecting with a story that's so big, so many seasons and so long ago that like some of the little details just never stayed in my mind until now. And I'm having a lot of fun getting even more out of that series than I did back in the day. So to have that kind of series could work. Again, the micro narrow focus kind of Rebels thing, but there's just so many Jedi and so many eras and so many years. There's a lot of room for them to play with it. If this is something real and going forward.
Yeah. That was the other thing I wrestled with that I wanted to hear your opinion about is there are plenty of options to where to set it. You could set it in the High Republic, before the events of the book, right? Or it could be, Jedi having like very small adventures that aren't going to impact the big story of the Nile and the Drenger that we're hearing in the publishing side, or it could be in the Old Republic. It could be like the Tales of the Jedi comic book, essential stories or just adventures that they had back in the day. Or it could be Luke's Jedi school, because we learned from that Rise of Kylo Ren comic book that Luke had some functioning Jedi who were going about the galaxy doing things for a while. Or it could even jump around the timeline. What would you think of that if it was Tales of the Jedi from all eras and it's an anthology?
I would love the all eras thing. Absolutely would. But also, call me crazy. I'm calling myself crazy. The 10 years between Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones, a lot going on, but the galaxy didn't feel like it was crumbling, but the foundations were slowly cracking. Could you analyze even more of what happened during that era?
Oh yeah. And spend some quality time with the Jedi that we know, but don't know as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Give me a depth of beloved. Give me Ki-Adi Mundi not falling for, you know, the bad ideas all the time.
Finally, we learn why Yaddle left. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, there's so many possibilities. But I think for me, Ken, my final thought on this is I think what I was excited about for the High Republic and what the High Republic has delivered so well is really showing Jedi as individuals, that they are all trying to follow this set of beliefs, but they interpret them differently. They wrestle with them differently. They have humanity. They have personality. They have joys and failures. And you get all of just the adventure serial thrill of like, yeah, and they're, you know, monk wizards with laser swords. And I would love to see that level of just celebration of how rich and open this idea of what a Jedi is and get that on the screen. So people who aren't as into the publishing side can experience that on the screen.
Great point. And also it should be called Tales of the Monk Warriors. I love that. Yeah, no. And the High Republic, again, we're talking about a big if and some interesting rumors out there, but the High Republic, changes my thought on the series in a positive way, and just like, oh yeah, no, this can definitely work. Not that it wouldn't have worked in the past, but the High Republic has just been so successful, like you said, just showing different Jedi, different relationships with the Force. It's just been fun. And to continue to do that is something that I always would have been excited for, but now it's more intriguing to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, next story. This is another, let's speculate, a thought starter of a story posted again on Star Wars News Net by Grant Davis, but this came from a tweet over the weekend. Following the Book of Boba Fett, Delilah S. Dawson, the author of great Star Wars books Phasma and the Black Spire novel, tweeted out, "And I have a pitch ready to go if the powers that be want the rest of Phasma's story after she fell through that fiery hole while fighting Finn. We know that her armor, we know what her armor is made of, and we know she's ruthless. I want to write what she does next." Again, total pitch, headcanon from a Star Wars author. We're not saying that this is what happened. This is that she'd love to tell the possible story of what happened after that moment. So we're going to dive in on that. Returning from certain death is a Star Wars tradition of sorts at this point, Joseph. And we discussed this a little bit recently, including with Phasma. We discussed it a lot, actually, with Maul and Book of Boba Fett, which is why she was having this conversation. But hearing what that Dawson has a handle on Phasma's story, got me excited. So let's discuss the dreams of a Phasma return. Your thoughts on this tweet and what this might be.
I think the tweet is great. I think Delilah S. Dawson is a great author, and I love both of these books. I think they're really different and really engaging. And I think if people haven't checked them out and they're interested, you know, Phasma really does tell the story of Phasma, but it also gives a little snapshot into the Resistance and the First Order. Mm. And the Black Spire book really gets into the psychology of what it takes to be a part of the First Order, what it takes to be a part of the Resistance. Just great stuff. So yes. I would absolutely love to see this book. I think we had a question recently on a News and Q's episode about what book would you turn into a live action movie? And my answer was Phasma, the Phasma book. So, yeah, very excited about this. I have always personally been in the camp of, you know, Star Wars exists in a pulp, in adventure serial, adventure thrills world. I like that part of Star Wars. I'm not as concerned about the how as sometimes other fans are. And I feel like, you know, an armored badass falling into a fiery pit is a Tuesday. To me, in the context, the way I look at the tone in the history of Star Wars, there's nothing about Phasma's fate that feels done to me.
Yeah. I've always had that thought. If that is the case, right? If Phasma died, and you know, so many sources confirm it. Blah blah blah. I think there's still, because of Delilah S. Dawson's book, there's so many powerful lessons to take from it. Phasma is a wonderfully layered and complicated character when you spend more time with her in that novel. So point being, I like, all right, cool. If that's her death, I can deal with that and take what I want from that story. But yeah, the armor itself has a story there. Not going to spoil the book. I believe in the old, you don't see them croak and take their final breath on screen. They're still alive. All right. Still waiting for Stannis Baratheon to come back. I'm kidding. He deserved it. So
this is all the Gwendolyn Christie death or not moments we're discussing.
Yes. But I love this idea. I love this idea. Of course, the last Dawson would have these thoughts. She spent so much time with this character, did such a good job, delving into her past and, I can't even imagine. I don't want to imagine. I would want to be surprised by something like this. But where would you go with this kind of story without stealing the pitch for yourself, Joseph? Where would you want the themes? What would it be about? What would it be about?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Is like I would be very excited for Delilah S. Dawson to hear her actual, you know, plot story, how the things happen, but the kind of ideas that I would be interested in the sort of insights available is, since Phasma was built up as somebody who came from a culture that was just about survival, and Phasma is like, I'm going to be the best at that. I'm going to be the best at surviving, and I want to climb the ladder, and what is the next way to be more powerful? And then she did that within the First Order. How does Phasma then feel about her own failure? I think there's a reason that Dawson is responding to Book of Boba Fett, because I think there are some similar ideas and tensions at work of somebody who defines themselves on their strength. How does that person then feel about their own failure? But even bigger, depending on when it would be set, is How does Phasma feel about the failure of the First Order? Should she, does she go, I'm happy to be done with them. It turned out they were weak, right?
Yeah.
And if so, where, how does she go to reclaim power, you know? Yeah. And I think this idea of how do other stormtroopers who suffered under her rule feel about her? Are there zealots who feel like, you know, who they want to find their leader again and want to return to her because they're so successfully broken? Or are there a lot of people like Finn and Janna who are like, ooh, if you see Phasma, we need to, you know, some of them go, we need to arrest her. And other people saying, we need her head. You know, her relationship with this, all of these citizens across the galaxy who got swept into the First Order is fascinating.
I love this. You know, does Finn now try to preach some sort of not forget, but forgiveness? You know, what is he is? And does he have to learn a valuable lesson?
About justice, not vengeance. Yeah.
Good. I love what you're saying. And when I was jotting down some notes, I did come to a point where I realized, oh, wait, I'm just kind of describing some of my continued hopes and thoughts about the themes of the Book of Boba Fett, right?
There's definitely some synergy there between Boba Fett and Phasma and Maul in terms of, you know, just ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe not so much a redemption story, but a kind of a reconciling with your path and your past and, you know, this idea of potentially all of her sins, because she has a lot of sins there. Maybe they come back to Haunter, which is something I was thinking about around Book of Boba Fett, as I said on the show this past week. And does she have to live a different kind of life? You know what I mean? Like, is she now in a spot where, again, not like I saw the light, it wouldn't be as interesting to me, but of like remaining who true to who she is, but redefining that, refocusing it, and absolutely stripped of her power, stripped of her literal shield, which is a part of the significance of her face and her eye being exposed in that battle with Finn. And I said too, but how could she fight her way back up the ladder? And does she become, do you look at her as a Moff Gideon type in this post New Republic world? Or yeah, maybe she's beyond that, right? The First Order was a, does she see it as a failing and want to leave it, like you said, or put it completely behind? Or like, no, maybe I finally do it my way. You know, we don't even need that Force stuff. All right. Whatever was going on, I didn't pay attention to that. I paid attention to other things. I don't know. That'd be the excitement in that. But just to see this character and, you know, if it was live action, especially seeing Gwendolyn Christie deal with this, but to see this character have to wrestle with these big questions in this Star Wars world, that'd be fun. The mask is gone. Can Phasma get a new one?
Yeah. Yeah. I really love that. And, you know, again, I think you're right to not share huge spoilers for the Phasma novel, but that she starts in a sort of lower tech Mad Max like community. Mm-hmm. Right. Does she go back to that and go, I'm going to rebuild. I'm going to slowly take over this, you know, lower tech planet. And then from there, I'm going to build an army and I'm going to be the next order.
Yeah. There's like I think it's parts of it, I do love this book so much, what Delilah Dawson does with Phasma in this book. And you're so right to point out Archex and Vibrating, so many other things and characters in the books too, especially Black Spire. But there's something about that and Gwendolyn Christie herself, where maybe I'm rooting for a warm, happy ending. But there's also something delicious of Phasma going, I'm a warlord now. Fett's a crime lord. I'm a warlord.
Yep. I'm a warlord and I will rule with fear. I don't care about respect. Yeah. I think that there is naturally to Maul and Boba Fett's stories, which we've talked about a lot recently, lost purpose, lost power, falling into some hell-like existence and then climbing back out of it changed. So yeah. I think it is natural to think of those ideas with Phasma. I also just think that there is this great real world Star Wars poetry of this is clearly a thing that Star Wars does is introduce like, we just need kind of like a hench person for this sort of plot dynamic. But yeah, they should look cool to serve their purpose. Wait, they're so cool. We kind of can't let go. Right. And that is the real world legacy of Boba Fett's limited screen time original trilogy. Maul's very limited screen time in the prequel trilogy, and Phasma is just taking the mantle, you know, the sequel trilogy version of Fett and Maul, and I want her to reclaim the title.
It'd be great. And look, you know, we try not to play in what ifs and should ofs and could ofs and would ofs. You know, there's some should ofs and could ofs I can get behind with Phasma in specifically The Last Jedi. I had some thoughts about going into that movie, what they could do with the character, and they did what they did, and actually do enjoy it. And it is part of this weird kind of Star Wars tradition. And even Ryan has some stuff saying of like, it's similar. A lot of people called out, you know, the South Park, Kenny dies every episode kind of vibe of, yeah, every, you know, she dies ? At the end. I can just take that as a fun runner, but, I agree with you, you know, Maul, Fett, Phasma, there's a tradition there. So maybe Phasma will stay alive and we'll find her somehow, somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my final thought is just kind of looking at the publishing side of Star Wars right now, just looking at the year we're in, there's a focus on High Republic, obviously. And then there's, you know, a decent amount of Kenobi content clearly to support Disney Plus. But then we do have this Shadow of the Sith book, which is both, you know, original trilogy since it's Luke and Lando, but it is them exploring all these ideas that are from the sequel trilogy about Ochi of Bestoon in the Shadow of the Sith, like the title. So that makes me feel like if you look at what the publishing slate is now, that there is interest along with High Republic to continue to explore things that are connected to the sequel trilogy era. So that gives me hope that there might be interest in this.
Hope indeed. And hope is what comebacks are built on in Star Wars. There you go. So we'll keep you updated, of course, if this becomes true, or Tales of the Jedi becomes true or more true. We love kind of swinging through these rumors and thought starters to get a little deeper to that tip of the iceberg Star Wars storytelling. All right. That is a look at news. Like I said, a little bit of a less, less volume of news out there this week. Before we take a break and get to your questions, we're going to do what we always do, recommend an audio book that we think you should try out on us. Joseph, looks like we've got a homework assignment.
That is right. We are thrilled to have this next homework assignment, only homework in that we want to be able to share our thoughts with you. But if you want to be all caught up with the thrilling adventures of the High Republic, there is a new story coming. You can check out the audiobook, The Fallen Star by Claudia Gray.
Download your free audiobook today, this one or another one on us, by going to audibletrial.com/4center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audio book. All right, we're going to take a quick break. On the other side, your questions here on 4center.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right?
For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome back to Four Center, the big show, the main show, the superstar destroyer of our fleet, the phasma of our post-apocalyptic village. All right, here we go. We got some questions, Jesse.
That's right. It's nice to be in our post-apocalyptic village. It's very cozy. There are a lot of trash can fires. It's great. We're going to warm our hands by the trash can fire and take two questions from Twitter and two questions from our patrons on Patreon. First, from Twitter, we go to Gaz. Gaz says, "Hello there. In The Force Awakens, we see Starkiller Base destroyed, but instead of exploding as we have seen in so many other movies, it actually turns into a new star. I find this interesting on so many levels. Starkiller drained the energy from a star, so in turn, this newly created star brings new light and balance to the system. We know its connection to kyber crystals in its previous form as Ilum. The strongest stars have hearts of kyber. What would you think of having a story of some importance told involving this new star system years after Episode 9, where a new solar system has formed around this mass of this new star? Also, would this be called the Ilum system, or perhaps the Solo system, in memorial to the loss of and sacrifice that Han made there?" A lot of great questions about this great moment in The Force Awakens and its expanded lore that it is indeed Ilum. Ken, where do you go with this?
Gaz, I think you presented just this beautiful tale of a rebirth unlike any other in Star Wars. A planet to a star, that's pretty powerful. Especially that planet, a planet we all have grown to love, I think, as Star Wars nerds diving deep into the lore. So I love this idea. I love dealing with it. I love that someone like Rey, someone like Finn, or any other new Jedi would have a deeper appreciation of that planet turned star, turned solar system, and that they would need to go there for some kind of reason. There could be some storytelling there. I wouldn't mind. Ilum system is probably the leader in the clubhouse for me. But what about Yuang star system? Wang. The droid.
Yeah. I'm very intrigued by that. I really love what you're saying, Ken. What Gaz is saying. There's this great thematic element of Star Wars that I think has always been there, but was really crystallized by the line, "No one has ever really gone." And this is such a great version of that, you know, the reality of the physical universe, that energy transforms. And it's just such a great story that this was a sacred place, right? With Ilum, then it was defiled. Then it was by being made into a weapon. And now it's this rebirth of something that generates light and warmth and power, you know?
Yeah.
And I think for me, I've always liked that story with Han, because there's a little bit of a grace note, right? To unlike some of the bad guys who fall into fiery pits, I feel like Han is gone. And I remember after The Force Awakens when people were like, "I don't know, he did get stabbed through the chest, fall a great deal, and then the planet he was on turned into a star. Do you think he made it off?"
Yeah.
And for me, there is a little bit of a difference between a little bit of the villain stories and the cliffhanger. Oh, they fell, but we didn't see what happened next. I feel like Han, this is, for me, this feels definitive. And I really like it because Han goes on this journey where he didn't believe in the Force. And now he is a part of the heart of a kyber star, you know?
Yeah. I like that idea a lot there. If the system has another name, would you maybe call it like the Solo Ravine or whatever, you know, like a constellation? I'm not trying to make it like Back to the Future, Clayton Ravine there with Clara Clayton. But, look to the sky. You'll see Solo's belt.
Yeah, I think that I would be happy with that depending on the perspective of the story and the perspective of the character. I think for me, I think calling it the Ilum system or calling it the Star of Ilum or sort of like reclaiming what it was, you know, I like that idea. But then, you know, depending on Gaz is asking about a whole story. And if there's a story that makes sense, that's great. But I can also see it just really popping up in a quick side mention in books or comics. And for me, that really depends on who's the character and what do they know? Are they a future Jedi? Are they a smuggler? Are they a historian? You know, is it Beaumont Kin who's going to list off facts? But the way legends seem to like spread in the galaxy, the way that's shown in the sequel trilogy, like I think some people would really go like, you know, that's where the Jedi used to get their crystals and it would be all about the Jedi for them. And I think maybe like some smugglers, some historians would be like, yeah, you know, it's not all about the Jedi, you know, this smuggler, this, old war hero, Han Solo sacrificed himself to save the entire galaxy there. To me, that's the Solo Star. Like, I think it would be interesting if it was based on character perception.
And your experiences throughout the galaxy and what loss you felt the most. Makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. How about you? Do you want it to be the the Star of Solo?
Star of Ilum sounds just almost biblical, right? I like that. I would be one of the characters who would look to the north and see Solo in the sky. I would be drawn to that story there. And I like this idea you're pitching too of, doesn't necessarily have to be an entire story or this is the new center of the galaxy, but just something that kind of is and something that we discover or learn in subsequent Star Wars storytelling. It would have its own kind of power for us fans, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And for me, we don't have any idea of what the storytelling moving past the sequel trilogy might be. But one of the things that would be fascinating to me is if some characters had the attitude of like, too many things are passing into like legend and lore. We need to, you know, name and know. So if there are characters who really want, like, we want history known. We're doing tours. Here's what happened here, you know.
Well, yeah, I'd love to see like an older, wiser Dr. Aphra start a tour of the galaxy.
Oh, wow.
You know,
yeah.
Kind of, you know, I'm going to say get right. She's got a lot of good things in her more than bad, but she's a wonderful, complicated character herself. But yeah, to have her be like, yeah, I'm going to name and know, I'll help. I'm the one to help you.
Nice. Any other thoughts on this one?
No, other than it's great, guys. I love it. I love that little lore of Starkiller Base coming from Ilum and adding this idea, this thought of, hey, it's a new star and it kind of almost returns to a pure form. I love that. Love that thought.
Yeah, I love that Han is a part of that. That's just really cool. All right, we're going to move on then to our next question from Richard Genji. I hope I said the name correctly, and if I didn't, my apologies. Richard also begins, hello there, a great Star Wars greeting. There's a lot of talk when I listen to various stuff about the original Star Wars trilogy and how they didn't really think of Vader being Luke's father until the time of writing Episode 5. But in A New Hope, Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru have that conversation about there's too much of his father in him. That's what I'm afraid of. What does that refer to, if not Vader being his father? Cheers, Richard. Cheers to you as well, Richard. This is a really fun one, Ken. I've got some thoughts, but I want to hear yours first.
Look, I think it starts this idea of it's dialogue that worked then in 77 and now being 80, 83 and beyond, because I love looking back at specifically New Hope and the corners that movie has for us all to play in, including George himself a little bit later on. I think a lot of things connect back to that movie. We talk about emotional canon, but just I've talked a lot about the reads and performances of Alec Guinness and some of the pauses are like an entire series. And I think this line really works. To me, it just on the surface, I guess you could say it represents the choice to not get involved. Owen's pretty clear about that. And Luke has that kind of, I got to stay on the farm type of thing because of that, as opposed to not pursuing your greater purpose. It's about playing small, and playing small isn't a bad thing. The galaxy needs moisture evaporator farmers. That's not everyone's got a hero blade and a great calling with capital letters. But for Luke, that's not the case. And I've always said I'm somewhat sympathetic to Uncle Owen a little bit, because the cost can be your life. And he was aware of that. So that's what it kind of always represented. And I think it's still, we don't know if that had played out, you know, that navigator on a spice freighter of a father. It could have just been that he died. It could have just been that maybe he turned in some way. It wasn't about Vader. Wasn't about that. And all of that, you know, made some sense to maybe lock Luke down, but also don't agree with Uncle Owen in the end. And Luke had to make that choice.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. I think for me, looking just at Star Wars, as it was called then, A New Hope, as we know it now, before the idea that Vader would be Luke's father, I think it is totally just really classic mythic hero's journey stuff. It's, do you stay home and safe, or you're staring out at those twin sons, you're being pulled to something. Are you going to go explore that adventure and discover who you truly are? And then on almost like a political level, right? It's the, you know, when Luke goes, I don't know, it's all so far away from here. And Obi-Wan's like, that's your uncle talking, right? It's about people are hurting and maybe I can do something about it. Are you willing to get involved, or is it apathy? Or is it like, not, you know, not my problem. It's far away, not my problem. So I think that there's a lot going on with it, but I think Owen's perspective in those lines of, you know, that's what I'm afraid of. He's too much like his father. It's this counterpoint to Obi-Wan going, go out there, take risks, discover who you are. If you see something wrong, do something about it. And if you look at just the information in the first film, right, yeah, it's pretty fascinating to think of Owen's perspective. And I think understandable. It is keeping Luke back. And I think there is a little bit of concern / fear in it. But from Owen's perspective, Luke's father should have stayed at home and taken care of his family. And instead, he got caught up in this adventure, this dream of being a hero. He followed Obi-Wan, as Obi-Wan says, on some damn fool idealistic crusade. And what happened to him when he was like, I'm going to go out in the stars. Obi-Wan has a great mission for me, a great plan. I'm going to learn the ways of the Force from Obi-Wan. What happened to Luke's father? He got killed by one of his own, Darth Vader. And that just ended up that you ran off to have a dream. You got slaughtered by someone who was supposed to be your friend. And I, Owen, end up raising Luke and trying my best to protect him from the folly that happened to you, because you had to run away and have an adventure.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful, right? And you said fear. And again, where I was thinking, like, you know, Owen's perspective, you know, look, calm down, kid. All right. I know you think the world's great out there. Don't worry. Like, trust me. Stick here. Grab a blue milk and let's go change the evaporator. But it's so wrapped up in fear. And I think a lot of the Dagobah stuff of Yoda to Luke and attachment and letting go, including your friends, maybe in this moment. And Bruce got more peace, right? Bruce got a better handle on attachment, fear, and how to truly maybe support and love someone there. So that dinner table conversation is pretty powerful.
It is just a little parenting book too, right? Of like, how do you, and I'm not a parent, but I think it applies to other things in life too. But is it how do you do best by your kids or anyone under your care or anyone you love? Do you keep them home and safe always? Or do you go, they need to go out and explore and find themselves and let's help them, because then we'll always be there for them, which means like where Brew is coming from.
Yeah, I'm so excited to see how we can kind of connect to this dinner table of attachment, shall we call it, with the Kenobi series, and what they're going to pull out of it. Because I'm fascinated by that. I love that. George, what else can you say? And Richard, this goes beyond your question, but you know what else you said? George thought this was it, right? I get one shot to make this movie. It wasn't even going great. You know, he pulls it together and it's all there. And to be able to come back to it and go, all right, now what do we do? And hey, look, we have this little space about who his father was and how can we pull more out of that story? That's always been built into Star Wars. You talk often, we've mentioned already in this episode, the tip of the iceberg storytelling. George is like, oh, there's a big iceberg there.
Yeah.
Let me go explore it. And I love that.
everything that happened with who his father was. Yeah, and that would have been a fascinating story, too. If Anakin and Vader were truly two entirely different people, that would have been an interesting story as well. Obviously, we have the one that we do. But I am also with Richard. I can't remember when I heard various information, but once I really started watching the films a ton on VHS, that line was like one of those, oh, yeah, here it comes. It's so great. That's what I'm afraid of. Because it seems like it's absolutely awareness of like, yeah, I don't want Luke going off, turning evil and killing half the galaxy.
Yeah,
that's what I'm afraid of. So it really, really works well with the story that we know. And I think that fear of, I'm afraid there's darkness in Luke. I think that works. But then I think all the stuff that we were talking about of just like, I'm afraid that I, Owen, disagree with the philosophy of go out there and get involved. Like, you have responsibilities in people right in front of you. Stay here, stay safe, take care of your own thing, stay in your lane. Don't be this dreamer who has to run out and find adventure in danger. I think all that is still there. Mm. Plus it has that added element of like, and your dad killed a lot of people.
Yeah. And I think, again, just now maybe discussing the movie and the sequence of scenes here, beyond Richard's question, but I think Owen and Brew at that table, particularly old grumpy Owen, really sets up the power of that twin sons moment, man. It really just is just tease it up, man, so you can go wonder as well with Luke.
I've said this many times before when I was like Luke staring at those twin sons. It's like, oh, man, I just... I need to get away. I don't want my parents to be burned into skeletons. So I'd like to avoid the way it happens, but man, I want that to happen. You know?
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah. Some of the power of Star Wars is relating to Luke wanting to get out there in the galaxy. Great question. We're going to move on to our questions from our patrons on Patreon. First one comes from Andrew McNabb. Andrew says, season's greetings, regardless of the season you get to this question. We get to questions as fast as we can, but we get a lot of great ones, so sometimes we're running a little behind. Here's what Andrew has to say. Could you ever see a character who is not a Force user when alive learn the ways after death and return as a Force ghost, as opposed to a memory a la Han in Rise of Skywalker? Do you think it would be another evolution in how the Force could be accessed? Or do you think it would take away the VIP, do you know who I am privileges that Jedi have? If it was going to happen, which non-Force using character would you like to see make an appearance? What sage wisdom would they have and who would it be for? Thank you for another wonderful year of doing what you do. Thank you, Andrew, for being a part of it and for the great question. Where do you go with this, Ken?
My gut reaction is to say, no, keep it VIP. I mean, come on, keep that rope up. But when you stop and think about it, that literally reeks of gatekeeping and a sense of ownership and leveling up in the Force, which might be in opposition to the Force itself. So let me try to push past my self-made boundaries there and find a way forward. Perhaps there's this idea of the Force finding a way to make this happen. A reward, not that it's about rewards, but all those beings in the galaxy that just kind of act on a feeling and push towards the light side, whether or not they have a laser sword or not. I think the Force, even if I'm not okay with that and want the rope up, the Force might be okay with that. And I like that there. I do think what we have now and what we know of the Force now and Jedi and everything having access to some of these things does speak, speaks to like commitment. Stuff Yoda's talking about, your choices beyond just your destiny. And it represents your continued evolution more than a reward, like I said. But, you know what I mean? If just like it's thematically, you know, it is this. We talk often about Luke letting go, Palpatine not letting go, light and dark and all those kind of things. So it works for me on those levels. But what Andrew's talking about here, there's some comfort I find in here to kind of wrap up my thoughts of it's almost like the Force could be Gandalf. Saying, end? No, the journey doesn't end here. Death is just another part or another path, one that we all must take. So I like that. And then specifically some of the characters that I like that for, Holdo. What a great sacrifice. And if she could have thoughts on that and getting to the other side and learning more and having the lesson of sacrifice. Maz Kanata, man. There's a long life of, maybe a little piracy all the way through. Who knows? Who knows what side she was on in that labor dispute? I don't know. But talk about commitment, choice, and the great fight. She's very clear about that in Force Awakens, about the only fight. And I think that is very aligned with the Force. And the final two for me, not to take all the answers here, but Sheard Emwin, yeah. Baze Malbus, are not what we would call force users per se, right? They have an understanding, and their combined end is very spiritual. It speaks of not just redemption, but change and what's truly in your heart and being one with the force in their own way. So I could see them doing that. And then they come back as like friendly, but bickering force ghosts to give you advice.
Contrasting advice. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. There you go.
Yeah. I think like it's really funny to imagine they're thinking, but should I do something? It's kind of scary. And Sheard's like, yes, just walk out there. And Baze is like, nah, I'm not sure. Great thoughts. I love the way that Andrew, I think kind of jokingly phrases this with the VIP, do you know who I am?
Yeah.
Privileges that Jedi have. But that is for me the starting point, just like with you. And the way that I really think of the story of Star Wars and the Jedi and the Force is, for me, the story of Star Wars is we all have power. You know, ultimately, the Jedi are just a metaphor for individuals. But even functionally within Star Wars, this is something we've talked about a lot of. It, to me, it's extremely meaningful that in the first film, Luke is the one with the magical abilities. He's probably the only one who can make that shot, but he can't make that unless Han chooses to use his power and turn around and help, right?
Yeah.
Once you go into Rogue One, Luke would not, naive farm boy, that's so far away from here, he wouldn't have had any of those shots if everybody in Rogue One didn't use their power, right? So to me, Star Wars is always about everybody has power, but we have different kinds of power. And I'm kind of okay. That's what makes me kind of okay with the Jedi having trained to have this unique relationship with the Force.
Yeah.
That it's not necessarily this privilege, like only you can get it, that it is, you know, it is something that Qui-Gon used his power, like as an individual to say, I think something's over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to spend all of this time and energy to explore it and believe in it. And crucially, I love that, as it currently exists in sort of a nebulous rules of Force spirits, that power is accessed by being selfless and only wanting to retain sentience within the Force so that you can help others, right?
Yeah.
And we see that with Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan, Yoda, Anakin, Luke, Leia. I mean, Anakin, there's more to be explored, but I think he helps Luke when he smiles at him. Andor. Yeah. And certainly, you know, the rules of exactly what is happening are up for examination and debate in Rise of Skywalker when we hear all of those Jedi voices. But what are those Jedi voices doing, right? They're there for support, right?
Yeah.
So I really like that just sort of philosophically. So I feel like if anybody retains sentience within the Force, it would have to be from a perspective for me of I want to be there for someone else to pass on wisdom. And that to me is kind of like the most important part of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Great breakdown of that there. And I love pointing out too, we talked about Force ghosts before. We'll talk about them again. The idea that it's Qui-Gon with that kind of big final lesson, right? After eons, dare we say, of Jedi and the Force, he's kind of the first to break through that, at least as far as what we know right now. And you're right, the rules have a lot of margins there on the paper there that we can get more on. But I love that. I love, and again, extension, and I love the vision of a VIP. I also love occasionally getting beyond the VIP rope. You know, it's fun. You taste it, you get free Dodger dogs in the VIP section. You never want to pay for one again. I get it. And there's power corrupting. So I don't necessarily think it's that, but I love that. Yeah, a continued show of your continued evolution, your continued growth, and where it comes from and how you're trying to obtain it is obviously very key.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think for me, since it is about like connection and intent and wanting to be there for others, or even that idea with Yoda and Obi-Wan, that's very specific of like, we need to be here. Luke still needs us, right? Mm-hmm. That's involved in Qui-Gon teaching Yoda that you're going to need to be there to help the person who's going to, you know, move forward. So I think from that perspective, it's really funny for me to imagine, you know, somebody like Hondo, right? Not that we've seen the canonical end of Hondo, but like, you know, you don't want Hondo to just be like, I did it. I figured out how to get past the rope. And now I can whisper to people about how to make great deals on puffer pigs. Like maybe it would come from the point of help, but you know, probably not. I also think it's about like intimacy. And there's a part of me that like, I love that Han is a memory. And I love that the idea of like, if you asked Han Solo, if he was passing into the nether regions, like, do you want to exist just as a kind of shimmery ghost and tell people about your feelings? And Han would be like, thanks, I'm good.
I had a good run.
I think I made a difference. I think I got through to the kid a little bit. I'm fine. I'm good with what I got. Yeah. I believe in the Force, but nah, no thanks. And then for people that I might be interested in, I go to very similar places with you. I think in Star Wars canon, it's nebulous. I think it works well being nebulous, that there are Force aware characters. There seem to be characters who are like, I feel the Force. I can't focus or control it to lift rocks, but I feel it. Maz Kanata kind of says that in Force Awakens, like, I'm no Jedi, but I know the Force, right? In Catalyst, I believe it's Lyra Urso we spend a bunch of time with, who is a researcher of kyber crystals as well, is seeking them out, that she talks about being very aware of the Force and feeling it. And I think Chirrut and Baze are great examples. So I'd be interested in Force aware characters, maybe stretching the boundaries.
Like maybe Lor San Tekka just suddenly whispers in Kylo's ear at one point, like, I told you.
that's very interesting. I don't think you can retain your existence in the Force just to be petty.
No? Okay. That's just doesn't track. Okay.
That's my personal take, but maybe we'll find out something else.
That's true. I'll side with that.
He's strong in the petty Force. The told you so. Any other thoughts on that one?
No, beautiful question. And then I love it. I love not having all the answers about Force ghosts. And that includes, you know, what George decides to do with it too, sometimes in his storytelling. I love that.
Yep. And I think that's fine. It's like when they go on to another adventure, I think that's fine. Yep. Final question comes to us from Mr. Haiku. This is also a question in which the timing matters a little bit. We try to get questions as quickly as we can. But this came in right before the premiere of a Book of Boba Fett. And some of it, I think, has already been addressed by the show, perhaps, depending on your point of view. But I thought it was a really interesting question, so I wanted to be sure to take it. Here we go, Ken. Mr. Haiku says, a thought in question about the title Book of Boba Fett. I'm thinking this title might have a hidden purpose idea behind it. In religious writings, text, and in general literature, the Book of, or simply Book of, generally means the account of, and it's written by someone that maybe heard events secondhand, or maybe they could have witnessed some things firsthand, or have called together a number of circulated myths or stories, or maybe writings that were found, but only parts of the whole were found, or only parts even decipherable. So the question this brings to my mind is, can we consider what we will see in this series as canon? I think the lines are blurred when we watch any Star Wars movie, show, or series on the notion of whether we are there or are we seeing a mostly true historical account of events. If this Boba series is an account of, then by who? Boba himself? Would we even trust this account? Fennec? If Boba is off, let's say, or someone on Tatooine that has heard the stories or saw Boba in this period but didn't have access to all the underground meetings, off-world events, etc., just filled in the blanks. What about the Jawas? Are they really simple scrappers, or maybe they are junk-collecting mini-monk scholars cruising the planet in a massive metal monastery that get into every nook and cranny of the planet and transcribes their findings and knowledge into a Book of Kells or Codex Gigas-like mega manuscripts? And this is one of many books from those. If we see a flashback of the Sarlacc pit escape, who would have known those details? Well, I guess it's been implied elsewhere that maybe the Jawas had. So by giving this a title starting with the Book of, are we seeing a screen-related series that throws legend and canon into question? Keep up the good work. So obviously now spoilers for the first episode of Book of Boba Fett. If you haven't seen it, we did see Boba Fett escape from the Sarlacc. And I think we do kind of have a sense, perhaps, of the perspective of the story, but I still thought this was a really great examination of unreliable narrators in Star Wars, or narrators in general, different narrators, and the importance of that title. So, Ken, where do you go with this?
This is, first of all, Mr. Haiku, this is a wonderful, well-thought-out intellectual question. Very fun. The Gospel of Boba Fett is, I love this. If in episode 2 he turns water into wine, we know we're definitely on to something a little different there. Take Star Wars into a sacrilegious territory. But I also think Mr. Hiku just wants absolute chaos, Joseph. He wants to take cannon and throw it out and burn the forest. This is wonderful stuff. And I think I've grown to love that title more than I thought I did when it first dropped on us a year ago. The Book of Boba Fett does take my mind into just the historical use of that, the biblical use, however you want to look at it. And what I think that does for me personally is I do take this show as canon. Of course it is. It's not a Star Wars what if, but the spirit of this question is about the spirit I like of how we take in Star Wars and discuss it, of just kind of, you know, whether it happens or not, the lessons of the tales supersede what takes place itself, which doesn't mean I don't enjoy the tales and enjoy the details and want those to always be the best and want to Star Wars to be the best it can be in terms of just answering those wonderful how questions. But this reminds me of what I'm watching might be a, like you said, unreliable narrator. It might be part of the story. It might be one perspective. It doesn't toss out any minor details that were revealed in Aftermath. Same with the way they handle Cobb Vanth. It just reminds me that this is a book of, this is a tale, this is an interpretation, and let's just see where it goes. And that's where I go on a very high level with it, surface high level of just like, that's how I sit down to watch each week. This is someone telling this tale of Boba Fett, and that's a spot I like to start in.
Yeah, I think for me, that's definitely the way I take it. This is kind of a great preview of the deep dive episode we're going to do later this week, looking at the opening crawls of Star Wars and how they sort of frame Star Wars. I think for me, starting with a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, it is framed as a story and as not necessarily a historical document, but a tale, a mythic tale, right? So I think all of Star Wars is open to consideration of an unreliable narrator or a history that has been pieced together. History knows that this event happened, but maybe different. There are different interpretations of exactly how or exactly when. I think all that's really a fascinating way to look at absolutely all of Star Wars framed as a story being told. And then within individual Star Wars stories, we did it a long time ago, an episode about unreliable narrators in the story. Maybe we should redo that and look at some of the, you know, active examples. Like I think Palpatine is an active example where he straight up lies.
Yeah.
You know, he's an unreliable narrator. You know, we got Olmec in the Clone Wars saying Jango Fett is not a Mandalorian. And then, you know, we can go like, ooh, we know the answer. Star Wars gave us the answer. Like, no, Star Wars showed us a character sharing their opinion, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think you go to Last Jedi and we actively see Luke and Kylo struggle to tell Rey an objective truth. An event happened, but they're struggling to tell it from any sort of objective perspective. And instead, they're communicating it from their perceived truth or their needed truth of this is the way I need to believe that this happened. You know, so all sorts of great examples of unreliable narrators in Star Wars, as well as choosing to look at the whole thing as narrated, I think opens it up to all these ideas.
All these ideas come tumbling in like Jabba's henchmen into the Sarlacc pit.
It's just so many in there.
So
I think getting specifically to Book of Boba Fett, I think it's really great to look at that title. We talked about it, I can't remember on what episode, but after it was revealed, the Book of Boba Fett, a little bit about all the different definitions of book and what made sense. I went back to just the actual dictionary definitions of book, and I've always taken it, as is so wisely put here by Mr. Kaiku, an account of Boba Fett. But now that we've seen that first episode, I went back to the Merriam-Webster's definitions, and there's two that really jump out to me. One is describing a book as a major division or a treatise or literary work, like the books of the Bible. Like it is a major division is clear to me, because I think there's a possibility as this all plays out that within the tale of this time in the galaxy, this is Boba Fett's chapter within it, right? Is it?
Yeah.
That's still up for discovery to me. Is this going to feel like, yeah, this is a part of the overall tale that started with The Mandalorian, and this is Boba Fett's you know, chapter, major division. Another specific definition of book that jumped out to me is something that yields knowledge or understanding. Examples being the great book of nature. Her face was an open book. And to me, I think that's really the big one is this is Boba Fett's story, but essentially and most importantly, this is the tale of who Boba Fett is.
Right.
It's like, do you want to understand Boba Fett? Here's the book of Boba Fett to know who this man was.
Yes. And what one of the things it's done for me, from my perspective, is after the first chapter, the first episode, and the off chance you haven't seen it yet, we'll give another spoiler warning. But calling it the Book of Boba Fett and all this great stuff that's going into it, you just added some additional great information, Joseph. Makes me think of the Tusken Raider stuff less as flashbacks. No, they are in this first episode, but more of just this story that's running alongside this other story in present day. Almost to the point of like, suddenly we were to also get young Boba Fett on Kamino for a couple episodes flashback as well. I see it less as, again, I can only use the term flashback from a movie sense. We always make the Wayne's World 2 joke, but like just this entire story of this character's life, this man's life, and learning more about him. And it just makes me want to even know more about young Boba Fett, Tusken Raider era Boba Fett, whatever, and how it all kind of connects to this one book of his life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the fact that he explicitly refers to what we're calling flashbacks in the language of visual storytelling, he calls dreams. He says to Fennec, the dreams are back, right?
Yeah.
Which I don't take as this didn't happen, but I do take it that we were seeing this entire story as events that happened, but filtered from the perception and memory of Boba Fett, which means, you know, if you ask Jawas, they might have a slightly different tale of the events, right? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if they try to spin it so they look better.
Yes, in their massive metal monasteries. Love this idea.
Yeah, if this is if you got the Jawa version of the story, it's like they conquered this the Titan that they found half dead on the sand, left for dead on the sands of Tatooine.
Yeah.
I think another element of this is that with Boba Fett, some of his appeal at different points in time has been the mystery.
Right.
So do you feel like there is an interpretation of the Book of Boba Fett so far that leaves open the mystery where a viewer could say, maybe this is canon, maybe this isn't. I am seeing a Book of Boba Fett, not the Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah, I think if you want that, right? My perspective is someone who does not want that. I treat this as canon, consider it canon. Clearly is, but like, yeah, the spirit of the question here, the room to wonder is big. So yeah, if I think if you want to look at it that way, I mean, you can look at all of it that way. Look at the legends and EU books. You can still say it's a certain point of view, but they go into so much detail on Boba Fett, right? In those EU books. So it might, maybe you want to keep that door open for yourself. And that's your choice there as a Star Wars fan, but I take it for what it is.
Yeah, I think you can always, if you like EU Boba Fett, I think you can just say that's my Boba Fett. That's great. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. These are stories being told for enjoyment and enlightenment. And if you get it from a different place than current modern canon, that's great. I don't have any problem with that. This question was asked before the first episode. So I think it was interesting, really interesting theorizing of, could we get a version of the Book of Boba Fett that is a little bit more, I am trying to spread mystery about who I am. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you half truths, and you're seeing some of it from multiple perspectives. So you're seeing interesting events that happened to Boba Fett, but there is that room to wonder which of these is exactly true, which preserves the mystery of Boba Fett. And I think that was a really interesting possibility before that first episode came out. But now that first episode came out, it feels like this is so deeply from Boba Fett's perspective that we are literally going into his dreams and that this is him reckoning with himself.
Yeah, great way to put it. And the other version, kind of a Legends of Luke Skywalker version, would have been interesting in its own way, too. But yeah, now I'm with you, especially the dreams and being able to take the spiritual journey with the man. That's where I'm at with it.
Yeah, this is like Boba Fett's one-person Broadway show about his history.
He steps to one side of the stage, spotlight up. Tuscan Raider store over here. Camino.
I welcome you into my Boctopod. Yeah, such a great hook left on the sands of Tatooine.
Yeah.
All right. Any other thoughts on this one, Ken?
No, Mr. Haiku, great question. Everyone always has some wonderful questions. I love the research and the thoughts behind this one specifically.
Yeah, absolutely. Great questions from everyone this week. Thank you all. That is it for our questions, Ken.
That is it indeed. We are almost out of here. I'll let you know where you can find us, and we'll talk here a little bit here. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well, where we put audio versions up of the podcast. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We are now on Anchor, and we're ready for a full year here on Anchor as we head into 2022. The podcast is available in a lot of different spots, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, and more, including Amazon Music, and more on the way as well. If there's any issues, sometimes when you switch these podcasts over to new hosting sites, there can be little issues along the way, podcasts not popping up in a timely fashion or anything. If you're in the Discord, you guys have already been keeping me updated. Continue to keep me updated, though everything is running very smooth now. Merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Then you can follow me at KedNapSock and go to my website, KedNapSock.com. And Joseph, where can they follow you?
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw on all the old social media. And to catch up with other adventures of mine, you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, which has links to lots of things. Ken, I think in your masterful memory of all of our places, I think you said we're on Anchor now, but we are on Acast, right?
Yes, I've got to change that in my notes. I've got to move forward and let go of the past and learn from it.
Absolutely.
No, we loved our time on Anchor, to be clear. All right. So I mentioned up top of the show, this episode dedicated to our friend now gone Zachary Bassinger, who passed away on December 27th. I wanted to tell a little story of Zach and tell you all where you can help those that are here now that he has moved on to the next plane with Luke and Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan and everyone there. January 11th, 2020. Zach tweeted out a series of tweets to me, Joseph, and Force Center, tagged us with just some very kind words, explaining that he was going through a lot of stuff, going through chemo, but he loved listening and took great comfort in the style in which me, Joseph, and Jennifer over the years have looked at Star Wars, just a positive, insightful look, you know, silly when we need to, but just kind of, and it just meant something. And that number one was the Zach I got to know after that was such a spirit of gratitude, even in the face of giant tribulation and spirit of giving. He was going through the chemo battle, but he wanted to take time to let us know, hey, you're doing a good job. And appreciated it. And I was January 2020, Joseph, was a month after that movie Rise of Skywalker came out. and for a lot of other reasons, I was home late at night. This was like a midnight, 1 a.m. my time kind of saw this tweet. And I was just in a down spot, down on Star Wars, down on some of the discourse and the conversations around Rise of Skywalker and just some stuff in my own life. And I just, you know, I'll see those tweets and you and I will give a like to them. And we love interacting with our listeners. You all really do become Force Center friends, but for some reason that one struck me in a way and I just really needed to hear it at that time. So I actually DM'd Zach and just kind of said, hey man, you know, whatever, want to thank you for this. And since then, over the course of 2 years, we struck up a pen pal like friendship and relationship and would write often. And he, was battling cancer since 2011. And that term battling, and you know, it is what it is. He had it and he was dealing with it and he was trying to, fight for one more day for well over 10 years. We brought him on Force Center. I brought him on a Spotlight Star Wars and it was released, during the summer, May, June of 2020, which a lot was going on in the world at that time. If we all recall, the murder of George Floyd happened the very week that he and I recorded this episode and released it. So I'd written him and said, hey, I'm not going to really promote it right now. He understood and we promoted it later. So many of you may have not heard the interview and not got to spend a lot of time with it. It is out there and we'll tweet out that link as well. He said so many wonderful things on that show. And then we talked about the power of pop and the power of Star Wars and how he and his position considered, you know, when he got a bit of bad news, he kept thinking, I just got to get to Avengers Endgame. And then he got there and I just got to get the end of the, and that was pretty powerful. And he talked on the show. He said, I do believe a lot of it's attitude. He said, that's the only thing that we're in control of. It's what we bring to the table emotionally. And I think a lot of Qui-Gon stuff, the focus determines reality. And the Zach I got to know, again, in the face of just a real tough situation, and he and his wife had to leave their lives and move back home to kind of rally around family to take on this this battle. And he had so much peace. He was giving, again, fought. We talked often about the bad days and the bad news, and I'd go for a while, not hear about him. And then we check in and he'd update me. Sometimes it was great news and sometimes it was not great news. And he continued to just kind of find inspiration from Star Wars. And he said this, I want to share with everyone, and it's in the interview. But I just thought, I just love the spirit of it for what we do here in Force Center. Because we're adults, Joseph. We're adults. And it's this wonderful kids thing. And he talked about, you know, Star Wars for 12-year-olds, the thing we always talked about. And he says, don't write off your love of Star Wars or ever feel like you have to. Because everything that I've ever needed to know about being the person that I've dreamed of being, about being the person I wanted to become, Star Wars gave me that. And every time he'd go into a treatment, some of it would work, some of it wouldn't. But every time he'd go in with visions of Wedge flying into the Death Star, Lando and flying in the Death Star and taking shots. And even as an adult, he was taking those Star Wars comforts with him into it. So Zachary was a beautiful soul. And I do believe he's gone to the next plane like Luke himself with great peace and great purpose, and want to just say thanks, Zach, for honoring us with your ears, for the listens and the great stuff you said. His brother, Michael, and his sister, Sarah, organized a GoFundMe to help support his caretakers, his wife, Chelsea, and his mother, Lynn. They've been his primary caretakers. And during this last couple years, like I said, they put their lives on a big giant pause to ensure that Zach had the best quality of care around him. And now that they're in this phase of their life, they could use a little help. And that's why Michael reached out to me. There's a GoFundMe. You can search for it. We're going to tweet out links and all that kind of stuff. And I'll tweet it out too on my personal page. It's support for the Bassinger family. So we're just every week we here in Force Center choose something to highlight. This is ours today, and specifically mine and Joseph's as well. But this hit me pretty hard last week. So Zach, thanks for sharing your life with us here in Force Center. Just doing something a lot harder than I think I have the courage to face. But I think you find that courage when you need to. And a lot of it is on the things you grow up on and the things that you learn from. And Star Wars was big in his life, and it is in ours. So Zach, this one's for you. And Joseph, thanks for letting me have this moment. I'm the blubbery one here, aren't I?
No, it is beautiful that you are showing the true emotion and the true impact. And that is, I remember getting those tweets because you're so right. It was a rough time in some ways for us, I think, because you and I found such joy in many other people, but you and I really went through it together. We found such joy in Rise of Skywalker. And as we always say, you know, everybody has their total right to their opinion of any story, but there was the anger towards Rise of Skywalker was really hard for me because I found things in it that I needed,
right?
And it felt like it went a little bit beyond, did you like this one, did you not like this one, to yeah. Don't have hope. It's dumb to think that you'd be Poe in that cockpit and people would come for you, right. It's dumb to think you'd be Rey reaching out and there would be people to answer to say, you can do this. You have never been alone. Yeah. So it was a hard time as Star Wars fans, and just being around, you know, some of the cynicism, some of the apathy, some of the Star Wars has always been dumb. It's a kiddie thing. You know, why, you know, every once in a while that can seep in. And for me, it can get into this, like, I'm not even making this. I'm just talking about it four times a week, you know?
Yeah.
And to get a message like that from Zach, that was a huge gift from him to us, to be reminded that not only do I enjoy hearing you other adults talk about the space wizards, it gives me strength and hope and joy to hear the discussions about the fun and the ideas. And for me, whenever I'm feeling down on what we do, which isn't often, but it can sneak in there. When we get a message, particularly a message like that, it is so powerful. And I think I take that into other conversations that I have with Star Wars fans, where sometimes they're a little bit negative, and I just have to say, like, well, I have this real gift of doing this podcast where, because of it, I get to hear from people who this makes a true difference in their lives. It has helped them through things. And I have not had cancer, but I've had family members and friends. I have been up close and personal to the process. I know how much strength it takes. Mm-hmm. So for me, it is very powerful to have somebody say, when I am in that huge of a battle, this gives me some strength and comfort during the process of being in that huge of a battle. I just take that so seriously. There's nothing more real in the world than facing some of the hardest thing you can, and where do you get strength? And the idea that Zach got strength from Star Wars is the most important thing, but that if our discussion of it at all gave him more strength and led to this, you know, great and sincere connection with you, it's such a wonderful reason to keep talking about Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. And to find where this crazy, silly, weird pulp adventure franchise, where it connects with your lives and your experiences. And again, who we all want to be. And, you know, that's why we don't do thumbs up, thumbs down reviews here. There's different ways to talk about Star Wars, different ways to take it in. I've continued to just enjoy and feel rewarded by looking at it as this giant myth that is meant to enrich your life, even outside the world of Star Wars discussion.
Yeah.
And that drove that home.
Yeah. And that quote that you shared is so great. It contains so many ideas about who you want to be as a person. And if you want to receive those ideas that way, it's so powerful that it can help people.
Yeah. In his spare time, when he had it, Zach was a little bit of a woodworker there. He actually gifted you and I some work. Mine is on display next to my Ewok in my home gym. It is a Game of Thrones and Star Wars crossover House Skywalker sigil. And I look at it every day. And I know, Joseph, you and your love of rooting against Palpatine turned into some beautiful art as well.
It is. It's when it was sent to us, I propped it up on a bookshelf in my bedroom. And so it's a weird thing that I pass every night before bed. And it is this beautiful, beautiful illustration of Sheev's horrible face. And I absolutely love it. It is rendered so beautifully. It captures, the real meaning of Sheev, but also just like the pop culture fun of he is the evil wizard representing everything we don't want to be. But then it's beautifully, beautifully rendered on this piece of just gorgeous wood.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, this isn't, exactly a scrimshaw, the actual carving.
Yeah.
But it's close to that. So it has a place to my heart in that it is related to the kind of artwork that my name comes from.
Love it. Ah, love it. Yeah. So, so blessed to have that there. And, again, we'll tweet out the link to the GoFundMe set up, by Zach's brother and sister to help his wife and mother, who, again, the primary caretakers. And if you haven't had a chance to dig in that interview, I just listened to it again, which is where I just hate listening to podcasts I was on, and it's sometimes so tough. And I sat and listened to it, not for any words I messed up, for the words of wisdom that Zach honored us with. So we'll see you down the line, buddy. Thanks again for all of you Force Center listeners who are, there's more of us, Poe. More of us.
We appreciate it. We'll see you next time here on Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.